Hi, this is Kyle Higgins, and you're listening to the GeekCast Radio Network.
You are now on the inside of what I like to call the Circle of Trust. We are all connected in the great circle of life.
You know something, Bert?
What?
I think you and I are going in circles.
It feels like we're going in circles.
The circle is now complete. When I left you, I was but the learner. Now I am the master.
Because it's a circle.
Yeah, we heard about the circle.
Yes, we're familiar with shapes.
Hi, this is Chuck.
This is Craig.
And this is Dan. Circles brought to you by the GeekCast Radio Network, the podcast that is back to talk about the world of the X-Men with the latest release of Logan. Yesterday, we'll be discussing that and all of its glory and guts, I guess. Plenty of guts, for sure. But before we get to talking about Logan, how's the week been going for you guys? Things been going, I guess.
I'm going to start it off on a negative note, because that's kind of how my week started. I got so sick on Sunday, sitting here playing Fallout 4, which I'm getting bored with, by the way. I'm kind of pretty much done with the game, 100% complete. But I was sitting there, nearly pooped my pants, did a penguin walk to the bathroom, and it just...
How long were you playing that game?
Pretty long. But, like, I went to the bathroom, and then after that, I was like, I don't feel like I'm going to eat any dinner tonight or anything. I'm not feeling good. So I kind of stopped playing the video game and was just kind of watching TV. And then I'm like, oh, I got to go to the bathroom again. And as it proceeded through the night, it just kept getting worse. And I ended up having a bucket in my lap while sitting on the toilet and just releasing from both ends of me. It was awful. It was like the South Park episode where Kenny's dad keeps throwing up and crapping at the same time. It was awful. Not solid from anywhere. It was just all liquid and water. It was definitely that stomach thing that's going around. I'm still kind of recovered from it.
Well, like Logan, I think this will definitely be an explicit podcast this time around. Yeah, well, that's a mental image I do not need whatsoever. So,
yeah, awesome. It was not pretty. I felt bad for my mom. My dad hid downstairs. My mom was like helping me out, and I was just not giving a shit. So I was like, open the door wide open.
Well, you had plenty to give. So I mean,
it sounds like you were given quite a few.
It was awful.
Wow,
it was the worst I've ever been sick. I've never had anything like that before.
I hope it wasn't the place where we hung out after the movie.
Well, no, you would have felt it already, Chuck.
I think I would have.
I'm sure you would have felt it already.
Of course, I didn't have the same thing as you, though, so maybe it was something specific.
Maybe. But it was Friday night, and this was Saturday around 3 o'clock, maybe. So.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Well,
not fun.
Wow, that's awful, but... On a completely different note whatsoever, one thing I wanted to bring up and talk about that's not X-Men related or comic book related in any realm, but is a TV show that I'm watching that is somewhat podcast related, oddly enough. I don't know if you guys know Pete Holmes. He's a comedian. He had a show on TBS like after Conan for a while. He's a podcast.
He does the Batman stuff that you guys like.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. He was E-Trade Baby. He has You Made It Weird podcast on Nerdist. Well, he is now doing a show on HBO, partnering with Judd Apatow, called Crashing, and it's loosely based on his life, little background in his life. Like, he was, like, growing up, he married his high school sweetheart, and he was trying to make it in comedy, and then things didn't go out so well, and it's kind of where that I don't want to give anything away, because the first episode's pretty much about that, and it's kind of about the fallout of some things that happen to him and his attempt to make it into the world of comedy. It's in the realm, I think, of something like Marin from Marc Maron and Louis, but it's its own little realm. It's weird, like, watching the show. I've watched the first two episodes, and it's almost, like, plotless in a way. It's just it's funny. Like Pete Holmes is great. Like, as someone who's listened to a lot of his comedy, you see a lot of his jokes come up. I know I'm familiar with some of the stories he's talking about because I've heard them, him talk about them. Like, he was recently on the Nerdist podcast itself and kind of went over some of these stories. But it's certainly a dramatized version of it. If you do like those shows and you do like Pete Holmes, I think you would certainly enjoy it. His first episode had Artie Lang from, he was, you know, Stern Show. He's legendary comedian, and he was also T.J. Miller showed up in the second episode for many guys. He's a dude who was in Transformers 5 and also Yogi Bear, of course. Forget Yogi Bear.
Weasel.
Yes. So I and Weasel, yeah, from Deadpool. That's true. I forgot about that. So as someone who enjoys stand up and enjoys that world, I like it a lot. I don't necessarily know at this point with only two episodes that I saw that it's really breaking the mold compared to shows that came before, but I think there's potential there, mostly because of Pete Holmes. He's kind of this like deer in headlights, really just not knowing the world, and had a really huge throwback when the second episode featured a Jarvis Clay song that my sister used to listen to like much of her life, and many people don't know who Jarvis Clay are, and that's fine. And it was weird, it was unexpected and funny moment for me. I don't know if it'd be a funny moment for a lot of people, but I would definitely recommend it. It's a good addition to HBO shows. Not nearly to the level of something like Silicon Valley, but it could get there. It's only, like I said, I think there's like four episodes out now. I've only saw the first two. But, you know, Chuck, you have watched or listened or read something that it's more extra man related, so I figured you could talk about that.
I have. I figured it'd be a good show to bring it up since we were talking about Logan. It is, in fact, a TV show, and I don't know if you guys have watched it yet, but I'm sure a lot of people out there have, and that is Legion.
I recorded the first, or got to the first episode and fell asleep, not because of the show, just because I fell asleep past 8:30. I can't stay up past 8:30 anymore because I'm old. So.
Yeah, old man problems. Hashtag.
I didn't have that problem, but I haven't seen it either. So,
all right, you guys need to turn your microphones off right now, close your computers, and go watch it.
All right, we're not getting this podcast done anytime soon.
I honestly think it's that good. I am totally in love with this show so far, and which is really surprising because I did not expect to like it. I was extremely skeptical. I didn't know a whole lot about it coming out. I didn't really see any clips or anything, any trailers sort of things. So I was like, comic book TV shows, you know, they're hit and miss. Some of them are good, like Flash and Arrow in the beginning, even though that's trailed off a lot. And then some of them are just a complete swing and a miss. So especially something about our beloved X-Men, I was a little bit skeptical of, to say the least. But this doesn't deal anything with the regular X-Men, but there's certainly some references to it. There's like in a lot of the shots, you see different things with like the X symbol in the background and different things. You can kind of pick it out, which is kind of cool. But right now it's not connected to anything with the X-Men in a concrete way, but they do in fact talk about mutants and mutant powers and stuff like that. So that's pretty interesting. But basically, I mean, if you don't know anything about Legion from the comics, he was the son of Charles Xavier and someone by the name of Gabriel Haller. So Legion's name is David Haller, and he's basically has multiple personalities and extremely powerful. Telepath, telekinesis, pyrokinesis, which he can start fire with his mind, and teleportation and stuff like that. So crazy powerful. And I think it was even something to do with like each of his personalities had a different power or something like that. I never read too much of him in the comics in the 90s.
Yeah, what I remember him most from is the fact that he kind of launched the Age of Apocalypse storyline. That's kind of my most
favorite
memory of him. So,
yeah, and that's, I guess for the most part, that's kind of all you really need to remember. In a lot of ways, it wasn't an extremely successful character other than that point. But in the show, it kind of starts out with him. I'm not going to give too much away, but I'll just give you the gist. It starts out with him. It shows him in a mental institution. And the actor, I forget his name now, does a phenomenal job. His name is Dan Stevens. I really like him. I like his little nuances to the character and like how he handles having this condition, or so we think. That's kind of something else about the show that's very like ambiguous, and it's very intellectual in that like you kind of have to figure out what's happening. And it may not be everyone's cup of tea, but there's, especially in the beginning, in the first episode or two, there's situations where a whole scene will get replayed. And when I started watching it, I thought my computer skipped or something, and it was like playing. I was like, oh man, you know, I already saw the scene. I just got set back like 2 minutes, but it was actually like it's playing the whole scene again, and there's like one little thing different. And so you're kind of like, you're trying to figure out, you know, is this thing that's happening now, is it happening in reality or is it happening in his head? Is he like remembering things differently? It's really intriguing. Like it's kind of hard to explain until you see it. And like I said, it might not be for everybody, but I think it's really interesting and I would give it a try. And I'm about, I think it's 5 episodes in. I've saw them all, including the one this week. The show, as far as I know, it's only running for 8 episodes to begin with. And then I guess they'll go from there. So they've finished 5. They got 3 more. So they pick up with him in the mental institution. And, you know, he has a couple of friends there. A new girl comes in. You know, he shows some interest in her and things like that. And then these things just start happening, some pretty crazy things, and that I don't want to give away. But it's just really, I was hooked from like the first episode, and really like the second episode is really what cemented me. And now I like look forward to the show every week. It's almost like, it's probably on the level with Flash for me. It's like really exciting to me now.
Man, that's like ultimate praise right there. I
mean... Yeah. Yeah. And it's set in a modern setting, but there's a lot of like, references, a lot of imagery to the 60s and 70s, which is pretty cool. Like another one character, it was something sort of on the astral plane, which is cool because they kind of introduced that concept. And, you know, he's still dressed in his like 70s clothes and stuff like that, like his leisure suit and stuff. So pretty cool there. Another cool thing about this, that the same, basically the same crew from like all the X-Men movies, you know, Bryan Singer, Simon Kinberg, Lauren Shuler Donner, they're all working on this. So you have the same creative team from like a lot of the X-Men movies and stuff like that, and Logan, working on this to kind of, I guess, keep a little bit of consistency with their other work, and, you know, making sure that it doesn't get out of hand too much, because obviously they know that universe and how to handle those characters and stuff like that. So,
wow! Now I really have to check it out. I'm actually kind of surprised. I didn't know if you would like that or not, just based upon what I saw of it, and that's cool. I'm looking forward to catch it out. Catch it out. That's,
yeah,
that's not a saying.
Catch it out. Yeah, I would definitely say it's like a psychological, almost like a psychological thriller type of thing. Like, you know, like I said, there's a little bit of ambiguity. Like, he's sort of been told his whole life that he has multiple personalities and he's schizophrenic, and then he's got these other people telling him that he's not schizophrenic, that's just his mutant power. So it's really cool to try to figure out the things that are happening in the show, which side does it fall on. So you're kind of like figuring it out as David Haller's figuring it out, going on the journey with him and stuff. So
cool. I have to make room for that, and of course Riverdale, which is now on CW, because that looks,
yeah. And by the way, if you guys like, it's on, it's like a weird time slot. It's Wednesday nights from 10 to 11. So it's kind of late, but you can go to their website, fxnow.com, and watch it on there whenever. So.
Right. So you need to have like a cable login for that to work?
I think you might.
Okay.
I know I didn't have to log in anything. It just said like select your service provider. Yeah. And I just clicked on it and just started playing. I didn't have to like sign up or log in or anything like that, but you know.
Interesting. Yeah, usually FX shows do eventually show up on like either Hulu or Netflix. Like I just finally started watching the OJ show on Netflix. That was really interesting, but I'll have to check that out. Very cool. Alrighty. Anything else before we take a quick break and come back and talk about Logan?
I just have a book recommendation.
Okay.
Actually, a book series. It's a graphic novel by Brian K. Vaughan. I gave a review on like the first and maybe second book in the series, but I just finished up the whole thing. It's Why the Last Man. If you go back to that earlier review, I believe I said that I really liked it, and I think people should check it out. Still going through with that. Gets a little weird in about mid-fifth book, where you're starting to get details on why the whole plague happened and everything, why there's only one male human and one male monkey left on the planet, and so it's really good. It gets kind of depressing, but it very much works with the story. And as always, Brian K. Vaughan is very impressive in his writing. I think this is a really great series, so I would definitely check it out. So yeah, Why the Last Man?
I read the first issue of that. I have no reason not to go back and read it. Well, when we come back, we'll be talking about Logan. And you know what? If you haven't listened or seen Logan, I would advise coming back later, because we're just going to spoil the hell out of it, because it's more fun that way. So after this, we'll be talking about the last entry of the Wolverine as we know it. We'll see you in a bit.
Hey guys, this is JD from the In Session Film Podcast. Every week on our show, you can join my co-host Brendan and I as we review the latest films that's out in theaters. It also inspires us to discuss a top three list of some sort, and we have a lot of other fun movie discussions as well. It's always a blast. And we also have a show on Fridays called our Extra Film Podcast. This is a show that gives us the space to talk about the latest indies and art films and other classics that we normally just don't get to talk about on our main show. You can find our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, and more. In fact, you can just see everything about us, including our social medias, at InSessionFilm.com. So join us every week. We'd absolutely love to have you.
All right, and welcome back. Today we're going to be discussing Logan, the latest film in the X-Men franchise, the third Wolverine film, and the second one get brought to us by director James Mangold, who previously made 310 to Yuma, Walk the Line, and both of which I feel like have some influences in this. But we're all huge X-Men fans here with a lot of the movies. Obviously, no one here likes Wolverine origins because we don't hate ourselves, but considering a lot of hype for this movie going in... potentially Hugh Jackman's last movie. Greg, I'll start with you. What were your overall thoughts about Logan?
Overall thoughts, I thought it was really good. I liked the amount of violence in it. It was definitely what you wanted to see for a Wolverine movie, being a Wolverine fan, that type of violence. I thought the story was a little weird, but I was able to discount a lot of it because it is supposedly a different timeline kind of situation going on, even though they don't explicitly really say that in the movie. So I kind of let go of a lot of different things. As an overall thing, I liked it, but I kind of liked the Wolverine better. But this was still really good. The thing that really killed it for me was the violence, actually. And I loved the little girl that played X-23. I thought she did a great job, and the role was kind of perfect altogether for her. It just got really weird for me, definitely later on into the movie, where we could spoil, right?
Yeah.
Where the weird clone of Logan showed up that looked exactly like him and everything, but younger. That was a bit bizarre to me. I don't know why I could stomach it better with Laura, but AKA X-23, maybe it's because it was in the comic, but just seeing a copy of Logan there, it was a bit bizarre. And that just was weird to me. And the adamantium bullet bringing that back was a little bit weird to me as well. But overall, I thought it was a lot of fun. It was definitely action-packed, definitely a lot of emotion in there. I loved the relationship between Logan and X-23. But yeah, I hope they make something more with that little girl, and hopefully the age stays appropriate so they can keep that actress in as X-23, because I seriously, she was my favorite part of the movie.
Yeah, Daphne Keene was her name, and this is really her first movie. Like, she did a Spanish miniseries, but this was the first time she was anything like major. And yeah, she certainly was, you know, a huge find, a breakout performance for sure. I was a little worried because, you know, X-23 in the comics is usually, she's a little older. She's more of a, at least in a lot of portrayals, that she's more of a teenager.
Yeah.
But I think it actually ended up working out better this way. But I guess I'll go next, and I'll be honest. I loved Logan a great deal. I thought, for me, honestly, it's arguably one of the best X-Men films, and up there is, for me, is one of the best comic book movies for a lot of reasons. Yeah, it's brutal, but I thought the brutality was thematically appropriate for the movie. And I know a lot was made of the R rating, but I think the R rating was there not just because it wanted to have violence or language, but more so to have a film that was geared towards adults.
Portrayed the character correctly.
That, and was not necessarily needed to worry about all the extracurricular aspects of making a comic book movie, whether it be product placement or movie placement, or, you know, being able to take time and have those slower, more methodical pace moments to really just focus in on the movie at hand. And I thought thematically, it's one of the most rich films out of the X-Men franchise. I still love First Class. It's still probably my favorite, but subjectively. But objectively, I just thought it was one of the best scripts out of any of the films in what it represented. The relationship was able to establish. Obviously, there's a lot of parallels in to this and a lot of classic Westerns. I mean, Shane is right there, front and center. But I think even more so, what came to my mind was, you know, things like Unforgiven and how you have a character at the helm who is attempting to kind of battle his own demons, his own notoriety, and he's trying to escape the violence that has kind of haunted him his entire life. And it's just finding it more and more challenging, and finding the more he tries to escape it, the more it confronts him. And trying to find peace within that. And then that on top of the fact that you have this relationship he's attempting to shy away from, and how that's reflected in the Laura character. The other thing that kind of came to mind too, talking about Westerns, was, you know, the man who shot Liberty Valance, the old line, you know, once legend becomes fact, print the legend. And this is taking place in a world where that legend was printed. The X-Men comics are, you know, have been created. There's this aura and legend about him as a person, and in reality, he's, you know, like Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, he's Jimmy Stewart in a barn telling the world that's not how it really went, but that's not what the world wants to hear. The legend's already become fact. They want the legend to be real. And again, I think that was a nice little touch. It's obviously very different than all the X-Men films that came before. I couldn't imagine, like, watching The Wolverine and then watching this. It would be very, almost, I would say, somewhat like tonal whiplash in a lot of ways. But I think that's fine. I think that's okay. I like how it kind of exists within itself, but it's still very much tied to what came before. And it's really a culmination of acclamation of everything, all those films, and kind of what they're building up to. And, you know, it's a certain level of tragedy, but I also think what's good about it is that it doesn't necessarily mean the end for these characters, because, you know, it could just be its own little thing and then exist in itself, and then somewhat like the Old Man Logan comic did, and then you kind of go from there. Obviously, it's nothing like the Old Man Logan comic. It barely elements, like the fact that it's there's some themes that kind of match, and it's a road trip, but beyond that, it's nothing like that, which I was okay with. But yeah, I'll stop railing, but overall, I kind of loved it. Chuck, what were your overall thoughts of Logan?
I got to say, I had a lot of mixed emotions about this movie. Like, I feel like, objectively, and I feel like I should love it, because there are a lot of great things about it that I can point to. But for whatever reason, I just can't really get into it. Like, I just didn't really care for it overall. Like, if you break it down piece by piece, I can point to a lot of great reasons. There's just something that's holding me back from ranking it really high in comic movies and even X-Men movies. But I'll point out some of the good things first. And one thing, like, you had a great point with talking about the Westerns and stuff. Another one I would even argue that it reminds you of is The Cowboys, in a way, with John Wayne. because you have like all the group of young kids around him, and it's sort of like their father figure. So at the end of Logan, you sort of have that dynamic going on where they're all kind of looking up to him. So that was pretty cool. I did enjoy that, and all the references to Westerns and stuff like that. My favorite part of the movie, to be honest, was the interaction with Xavier and Logan, like where their relationship has gone and stuff like that. Like they kind of bicker at each other, but like you could see Xavier is one of the few people in his life that Logan actually loves and cares for. So like in a way, like he feels like he has nothing, but you know, he's had Charles his whole life, and well, not his whole life, but most of his adult life. So I really loved their interaction. I thought Patrick Stewart was very funny in a lot of scenes, you know, especially the beginning where he's like reciting the Taco Bell commercial and stuff like that. That was hilarious. I was cracking up. A lot of the scenes are great. I thought the way they did his, you know, his telepathic seizures or whatever they were, I thought that was really cool. You know, you remember like in some of the older X-Men movies where he would just like freeze everyone. He would like freeze time almost. So it was kind of like that, but it was a little off because everyone was in a lot of pain and they knew something was wrong and they weren't like oblivious to it. So I thought that was really cool. I think I'll echo what Greg said about X-23. She was fantastic. I love how, you know, they really didn't give her any lines through most of the movie. I thought that made her impact even greater. I thought that was really cool. And then at the end, you kind of, it's like, oh, you can talk, you know, and I thought that was the perfect way to do it. So I really enjoyed that. And then also, you know, this is kind of proof that you can have a good movie, you can have a great script without a love interest, really, which is kind of a weird prospect to some people. Like, you know, a lot of people think of an emotional movie, it's like someone has to have a love interest as far as a close relationship. But this is more of like a lot of father and child relationship type of thing. So it's a little different. And I think that's pretty cool, that whole dynamic. So I like that aspect of it.
Yeah, it definitely had a family aspect with Xavier, yeah, too, because they set that up with kind of them having a dinner with that one family that got ran off the road with the horses. You could see them all sit down, yeah, and it was father, son, and grandchild.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was really cool. It was like, I think we've seen like plenty of love interest for Logan over the years in his movies. Like, you know, you had Jean and what was the one from Origins? I forget her name.
Oh,
Silver Fox.
Yes.
And then you obviously have in the Wolverine. And, you know, I think even there was a little bit of flirtation with him and Storm there for a little bit. And so there's like plenty of that. I was glad to see them not throw in another love interest for him, because I feel like that was just kind of getting old, and it was great to see this other aspect of his character. So I really enjoyed that. But then for some of the things that I didn't like, I'm sure there's going to be a ton of people that disagree with me. For whatever reason, I didn't like the clone, like Greg mentioned. That was, I mean, I understand the symbolism of it, you know, and how younger versus older, and, you know, there's things that go deeper than that and stuff, but it just kind of threw me off personally for some reason. I didn't care for it. And the way, you know, the way the final scene played out, the death scene, it just, to me, like, I hated it because, like, not because of how it was, I guess not because of how it was acted or anything like that, but it didn't seem like that's the way Wolverine should die to me, like, on a tree stump in the middle of the woods, and he can't do a damn thing. Like, it just it didn't seem like how he should go out to me, you know, like, kind of, I guess in a way he didn't go out fighting, even though he was fighting him, he was kind of like basically couldn't do jack against this guy. There's a reason that they did that and stuff, but I just didn't care for it.
Yeah. I mean, I could not disagree more with that, to be honest with you, because I felt like that's not what that was about. Like, that's, to me, that is the ultimate Logan moment, because it's not about the physical act. It's about the emotional, and the fact that that's the moment the movie's been building towards, that ability to recognize and let go of everything that came before and give himself a moment of peace and love for another person to accept that paternal responsibility. And I don't know, I thought that was a beautiful moment. And I, if it was on a tree stump or, you know, in the middle of a parking lot, to me, it's not the, it's not necessarily the location, or it's the bravery and it's the selflessness that he was been fighting against. And that to me was like what made that moment like such a, I don't know. I was teary eyed watching that and seeing, you know, especially her reaction saying daddy. And it was the first time you saw her in that light and him, and it, like seeing both of the barriers that both of those characters have clearly have in, but allowing them to break down those barriers. And like, I don't know, it's like the ultimate, you know, it's almost like Shakespearean tragedy in that realm. So I was thankful that you were able to get that in a Logan movie.
Yeah, no, I definitely get that. I definitely understand. But for whatever reason, I didn't like it. Like, I thought there were other instances, like in past X-Men movies, where he did things that weren't for himself. You know, sacrifices he made. Killing Jean, for one, is extremely emotional part of the character. I know we don't like to talk about The Last Stand, but you know, there's things like that. And I look at the moments, the so many moments that he was happy, and maybe it's because, you know, those other characters aren't around, but it just seemed like he said like bad things happen to everyone he cares about and stuff like that. But he really hasn't been miserable like that his whole life. Like, there were times when he was extremely happy, and I feel like in his older age and his wisdom, I felt like he would have been dealing with that better. I guess that's just my take on it, but
I guess what I think we're seeing is that those moments have been barred in tragedy. You know, it's evident that, you know, the X-Men have been brutally killed by Xavier by accident, and everyone that he did love in the past, you know, he's lived nearly 200 years at this point, and the person that he's had great respect for has basically become his own worst enemy. You know, he's had to see him be killed. You know, this family he was just dealing with have been killed. Like, yeah, I mean, there were element moments in his life where he did achieve happiness, but nearly every time that happened, the end result was tragic, unfortunately. And I agree with you that there were moments where within the X-Men franchise that, yeah, like he's certainly done things for others and in the physical act. But I think what was different for me for this moment wasn't the physical nature of it. It wasn't the fact that he was risking his life. It was more so the emotional aspect of it. And yeah, I agree, like, you have his relationship with Jean, but for me, it was just how better handled it was with his relationship with Laura in this. And it was deeper than, and I think you touched upon it, and like how it wasn't a love interest. It wasn't the fact that he thought she was cute and gave him an adamantium boner. It was because, you know, it was something a little bit deeper, as they say. So I guess that's what was different for me compared to something like X3 that he, or, you know, even like, I guess X2, he had certain moments like that too. I don't know. X-Men. I mean, he had certain similarities with like Rogue, you know, in the first two X-Men movies. But I felt it was a little stronger.
Like, I get the, you know, the fact that he's endured more loss in this film, you know, compared to some of the other ones. But I look at like his immediate connection with Rogue in some of those. Like, he had already been through a lot of crap in his life up to that point, like all the wars he's been in, and, you know, even the way he grew up and the way people treated him and shunned him and things like that. And he had like an immediate connection with Rogue, and he always wanted to like help the younger ones. And it seems like in this one, he's like totally opposite. He's like extremely off put by the idea of a kid wanting to look up to him or get help from him or something like that. I don't know. It just seemed a little inconsistent in my head. I don't know. Maybe I just wasn't looking at it the right way.
I mean, I guess it might have been inconsistent with like the previous movies in some way, but I guess there's obviously a lot here, a lot of empty space that we don't know, you know, like things that are hinted at and things that are mentioned. Yeah. So that, you know, unlike, say, with the actually Old Man Logan story, where we, you know, eventually find out why he won't pop those claws. And this, we don't have that. And it, you kind of led to think that, that maybe he wasn't responsible for the X-Men not being there, because, you know, Xavier talks about, like, makes a comment about, like, what did you do? And later he finds out it was him. But yeah, I agree. Maybe, like, the sense of who he was as that original Wolverine that we saw in the first X-Men movie, you know, in 2000, when he was like half the man that he is now, and the fact, you know, body weight wise and muscle mass wise. But but I guess, like, the way I looked at it was there were pieces that the person he was then isn't who he is now. And I felt like it, like, the opening scene in a way established the kind of how downtrodden he has become, you know, the fact that, like, his life is dependent upon a limo, and, like, that's his livelihood, and, like, that's his only hope. And, you know, it's a guy who's been beaten down. So I guess, you know, continuity wise, it's probably not the worst thing that's actually happened in the X-Men film, because what is this, like,
no,
the
not time before.
Caliban movie? Caliban's been in a movie for a different version of him. But I can see if, like, you're looking for a continuation of the story that's been building for the last few movies, it's not necessarily the same thing, especially since he has this adamantium skull back somehow, and we don't know how that happened. Yeah.
I agree. I think there's a lot of great aspects of this movie. I'm not disagreeing with you on a lot of them. I think it's more stems from the fact of just what I was expecting, kind of thing.
Yeah, I get that.
If I could look at the movie objectively, it's like, yeah, this is extremely well written. I mean, this is really great in those ways. I almost think, if I could make a suggestion about it, like, I think it almost would have been more powerful if they had followed the not popping the claws theme, like, in the comic, in a way, because, like, it would have illustrated the way he felt that guilt so much more. You know what I mean? And, you know, if he felt responsible for some of these things, maybe that's why he's not popping his claws, and he's, like, you know, kind of taking an oath against violence. I think that would have been maybe even more powerful.
Yeah. I kind of thought that was the case he starts getting beat up, and I'm like, oh, maybe, like, the directors are going to go with that. But, you know, quickly that's not the case, as he stabs a dude in the head with his claws. So,
yeah.
Did you have any other points? I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's about it. I was not fond of the adamantium bullet being brought up again, but it wasn't too bad, I guess. You know, I definitely enjoyed the movie. It was a fun watch. Like, I didn't walk away feeling like, you know, I just wasted my money or anything like that. Like, I did have a lot of fun, you know, watching it and stuff. But I think expectation wise, it just kind of threw me for a little, you know, curveball there. And, you know, maybe be one of those things where if I watch it on a second time or third time, I might be like, you know, wow, I really love this movie more than, you know, before. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, it's like I mentioned, it's unlike any of the other X-Men films. It's not, I don't know, it's its own thing for sure. Like, it takes more from Terminator 2 than it does X-Men 2. You guys talked about the clone villain part, but what about the other antagonist in this, Pierce, played by Boyd Holbrook, who's, you know, who's, what did you think of him as, like, a presence, as a character? Any thoughts? Greg, any thoughts on him?
I thought it was really cool that it was some violent guy that kind of looked up to Wolverine in the past, but he was a normal human, but just with this modified robot hand kind of situation going on with a platoon. And the weaknesses of Wolverine definitely amped up their threat level to him. So I thought they leveled off what a human being could do up against Wolverine. So I thought that was kind of cool. But yeah, I thought he was cool, I guess, designed character with how he looked and everything. And I thought he was well acted. I don't know the gentleman's name who played the
Boyd
character.
Boyd Holbrook is
actor. Okay. But yeah, I thought it was much better than Evil Logan, which just kind of felt a little cliche to me, but
Chuck, any thoughts on Boyd or Pierce as a character?
Yeah, I liked him. And it's kind of one of those that it's like the character you like to hate sort of thing, because you just know how much of a dirtbag he is and what he's trying to do and everything like that. But I think, like Greg said, he's really well acted and everything. And he kind of had that smug persona where, you know, it even kind of like took Logan aback, because he was like, he couldn't believe like kind of the audacity of this guy in a lot of ways. I thought the Reavers were cool. One thing I forgot to mention before was, I don't remember, like, back in the kind of in the 90s and stuff, when they would show the Reavers, like, some of them, there's one guy in particular that, like, his whole bottom half was like a machine with like two tracks on it.
Yeah.
And I kind of
it was Rob Liefeld's best favorite character to design, because he had no feet.
Right. That was his attempt at drawing legs, and it just came out like that. I almost got the feeling like there's a little symbology in the way in a way that they tried to represent that. I don't know if it was just on purpose or if it was just something that I made up in my head, but when they showed them on the pickup trucks, and there was kind of like, there was like a guy on the back of the trucks with the big machine gun. Like, in the one scene hit me in particular when they, like, just kind of the camera angle and they pulled up and the guy's in the truck, it kind of looked like the truck is his bottom part, you know, kind of like those. And like the imagery just hit me. I remembered that like image from the comics, and I was like, oh, I wonder if they're trying to like kind of, you know, make a reference to that dude. But I thought that was kind of cool. It could be something that they didn't even intend to do. So I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I wasn't sure if like, if Pierce was that guy that was the motorized thing. Like I liked the pieces that we got from Boyd Holbrook as Pierce, but I always, like, I got a sense that they were building up to something more with this character that just never came to fruition. Like the thing I was thinking of is something like weird comparison, but the Incredible Hulk from 2008, and how like you had Tim Roth, and like he, you know, eventually became Abomination. Like I didn't expect Pierce to become like another Wolverine, but I just, I don't know. He felt like he would had a threatening presence at first, but then he just ends up not. He ends up being in this weird parallel, you know, that at the end that he doesn't really end up doing much.
It seems like he kind of chickens out towards the end.
Yeah, and so that was like I was hoping from a little bit more. I thought the Reavers, as like, you know, like you mentioned, Greg, their look was pretty cool. Like it was just like a touch futuristic, like the world itself.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that was probably the weakest element of the movie. Actually, I didn't mind the clone piece, because it is a little heavy handed, because it's the subtext becoming text. You know, the idea.
Well, they took so long on that setup, and it's like, okay, like there's somebody back there that Xavier thinks is Logan, and we definitely know that wasn't Logan. But then when he did sink the claws into Xavier's chest and had the close up, I'm like, who the hell is this? Wait a minute. Like the CGI in that scene was so bad. I thought it was like just a random Reaver with like somebody that had like some kind of handle grip thing that looked like Wolverine's claws. It was just very bizarre. So from the setup being so heavy handled, and then the CGI being so sloppy, it just kind of left that very confusing to me.
I don't know. I didn't have an issue with the CGI there at all, to be honest with you. And I mean, yeah, I think we knew that it wasn't Logan in the background, but during that moment, that's not really what like I was focused on. I was kind of focused on Patrick Stewart's performance in that, which I thought was legitimately one of the best bits of acting he's ever done. Just like, you know, that's this kind of soliloquy of him expressing his gratitude and his regret for just, you know, they've been searching for this moment of normalcy and they finally got it, and how the bittersweetness of it, and how he kind of doesn't feel he's deserving of it. I thought that moment within itself, just what he was saying, was, you know, for lack of a better word, pretty beautiful. And is it telegraphed? Yes, I would say so. But for me, what made it, not, I thought it was going to be Pierce or something like that, just one of the Reavers like behind him. That was kind of my assumption going in, and to see that it was, you know, Logan at first, I was like, like what is going here? And I think too, what worked for me is just like the shock and horror of Stewart's face in that moment. For all he knows, you know, Logan just killed him, or he's killing him, and like not knowing just what just happened in the course of, you know, like the tragedy of that. It kind of worked for me. I mean, maybe if you went back and watched it again, I could notice the CGI, but when within the moment, it didn't seem to really have an effect. Like, I was shocked, like, what the hell just happened? But yeah. It wasn't, like, due to the special effects in that scene.
I could have sworn someone was, like, dreaming that at the moment when I first saw it. Like, and, it, you know, and then the scene kept going, and I'm like, oh, they're going to go with it. They're just doing it. I was like, it's not a dream. It's not a vision or anything or a flashback or a nightmare. It's really happening. Yeah, that was funny.
Yeah. I was surprised they totally wasted that family like they did, especially the dad. I was like, wow, they're not holding back in this. But
I did like the quick little line that Logan said when he picked Xavier up. He said, it wasn't me. It wasn't me.
Yeah.
You know, that was like three words, but they were really powerful because it kind of just talked about their relationship, and he didn't want him to think that, you know, he was the one and stuff like that, betraying and stuff. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah. What I did like about the clone was like it had, to talk about Terminator 2, it did have like a Terminator vibe to it, like just this unstoppable killing machine. You know, it was unexpected. Like, I wasn't sure where they were going with the X-24. I mean, was it the best way to go? No. It was better than, you know, the Transformer that he fought in the Wolverine at the end, I guess. But, The touch upon some things I wasn't the biggest fan of, it's kind of a nitpick, but, like, I know it's challenging to get exposition. I felt like in a lot of ways they were able to do that pretty cleverly, especially using, like, the car radio. But when you kind of he was able to sit down and watch the movie on the phone, that kind of gave him all the background about, you know, what was happening to the kids. It's like, it's challenging because how do you do that? There's a few ways. You can have her kind of just say it, have her just, you know, have a recording of it. Having the, you know, mini digital documentary on her phone, I think it may work better visually than it does storytelling wise. I don't know if it was the best way to handle that moment, but it was something I'm like, I don't know. This place does not have great security considering all the crazy things that they're doing, that they're not confiscating phones, but, you know. Maybe they're...
She was doing it right in front of people sometimes.
Yeah. It's like, I guess you're just going to let her wear the GoPro as she's doing this? I guess, all right. More power to you.
Yeah.
One thing we didn't talk about, I mentioned a little bit, was, you know, this is rated R, and there's been a lot made about that. Did you at all feel like it was trying too hard to justify that rating, or that, like, it opening up the door a little bit too much, and it was like, okay, things are getting gratuitous at all?
No. I don't think so. I don't really have a problem with it. And if anyone would, I would. So I didn't mind it. I mean, like I mentioned before, I think it might have been more powerful if they went with the whole thing of not popping the claws, but I didn't really have a problem with it, especially because in the first scene he's obviously drunk when he's getting out of the car. He's like kind of stumbling and twisting his ankles and stuff. So
what do you guys think of the action scenes overall? Like, there's, you know, there's the opening sequence, there's I think that the car chase, which I was not expecting a car chase in a Wolverine movie, but you know, any of those movements that stood out for you guys?
The fence thing I thought was interesting. Like, when he was he was flying towards the fence, and I was like, oh, you know, every other action movie we've ever seen in our entire lives, your expectation is they're just going to crash through the fence and keep going, and that's not at all what happens. So that was kind of cool.
I liked it when he slammed him into something else. I cringed on that one.
Oh, yeah. He was still shooting at them, too, when he was dragged.
Yeah. I thought there was a lot of those good little moments where it went away you weren't expecting, like you know, near the end when the guy's monologuing and he just shoots him in the face. I'm like, that was nice. Like, that was a that was a good little moment. And within that car chase, I thought they had a lot of good character beats, especially the way like Laura was protecting Professor Xavier. I thought that was a nice little touch. It gave you a lot of insight into her character, like almost immediately. Like she clearly cares about him, and despite the fact that she was just mauling a dude with her in the face with a adamantium claw, you know, she actually has a soul, which I thought was a good little touch.
Yeah. And one other thing I wanted to talk about was I brought it up briefly before, but his little telepathic seizure things.
Yeah.
The one where he's upstairs in the hotel room and all the guys are surrounding him with the gun. I know, like, earlier in the movie, they kind of made it seem like these were random and he couldn't really control them. But it was kind of obvious in that scene that he's controlling it because they have the guns pointed right on him and he's just kind of stalling until Logan can get there. I thought that was pretty cool. And then, you know, as they're kind of going through all the people in the lobby, he's like apologizing to them and stuff. But it was like something he had to do.
Was he controlling? It's interesting because I thought like what I was thinking, it was almost like a
panic attack.
Like a panic reaction because like, oh no, like it was just like a reflex because now he's in danger. And that was I don't know if that was, but you could be right. Maybe it was like a defense move. He's like, this is all I got right now. So
yeah, it could be like you could very well be right. I just took it as that way because it was similar to like the way, you know, he dealt with the horses.
Yeah,
kind of,
yeah.
You know, trying to calm them down. So it was kind of like him just mustering one last bit of his. Of his mutant power to try to like a last ditch effort to try to save things. And
maybe it was kind of like he was panicked too. So it wasn't kind of the effect, calming effect as the horses. It was more of a dangerous extreme situation.
And one thing I wanted to ask you guys, and I wanted to get Dan's take on it. Cause I know Greg and I discussed it a little bit after we got out of the movie. What was your take on how Logan was the only one that was kind of able to move during one of those seizures? Like he could kind of move and make his way through slowly and everyone else was pretty much paralyzed.
I mean, I guess since Laura was the same way, I assumed it had to be due to somewhat of his healing factor in some way. Like it's interesting. That was my normal assumption. It was because of his healing factor, he's able to fight against it. Or maybe, you know, he's also, I know like when it comes to telepath, like he had some resistance to begin with a little bit just because of his crazy brain, so I just thought his brain would be able to resist whatever was happening, because it seemed like based upon the reaction, like it was like seizing up the nervous system, like the Caliban mentioned, like he was like unable to breathe and things like that, so that was my guess. So I don't know. I don't know if that's what you have a different theory.
We kind of had a similar thing, Greg and I. I think we were talking about the healing factor, and I kind of pointed to the fact that his memories have been messed with by, you know, the Weapon X program so much that he has, like, a lot of scar tissue on his brain, and I feel like maybe that caused it to not affect him as much as the other people, just because his... he has so much scar tissue from them kind of pulling out memories and deleting, erasing memories and things like that. So I don't know. That was just kind of what I was thinking. That between that and the healing factor, that's kind of what I was thinking.
Because it was interesting. So like I wasn't, because when he would kill the people, like I love that scene when he would like slowly just like stab someone in the face, but they wouldn't fall over. But he doesn't have telekinesis. So I don't know if it's just because it's like it's slowing down the brain's kind of communication with the rest of the body that's why. I don't know. I wondered that. To throw a question at you guys, so I know in this they're kind of seeking Eden. Do you think A, does Eden exist, and B, do you have any theories of what it might be?
I thought that camp was Eden.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, that the little fort that they kind of got to in North Dakota.
It was made up in the comic books, but then those kids kind of made it real. They used those fake coordinates, but it was kind of like a little code almost of, everybody else around us will think it's fake, and it is, but we're going to make it something real. So it was kind of like a hiding in plain sight kind of situation.
See, because like he was talking to someone on the walkie-talkie that was on the Canadian border, so I took it that the people he was communicating with were part of the Eden, but maybe that. So maybe I'm right, because I think you're right. The coordinates were where they met up, but
said Eden, and yeah, that's where they were heading the whole time. And they said in comic books, Eden was at this location. Those are the coordinates that they went to. So.
Interesting.
I was actually kind of unclear as to why they were going into Canada, because the Weapon X program sort of originated there. I don't know if it was still there, but it's like it would seem more dangerous. You're going closer to, you know, those facilities and stuff where they experimented on all those people, and it just seemed like you'd be better off going to Mexico the other way or going somewhere else, even though, you know, maybe at this point they have facilities everywhere. I don't know, but
maybe it's Alpha Flight. Maybe that's where they're going to, is be rescued by Alpha Flight.
Yeah.
It's going to be Puck on the other end. Because the way I took it, so I thought they were, this is kind of my theory in my head, because if you look at the comic that they were reading, it had Sauron. It was on the cover of it, and Sauron's known to be part of the Savage Land. So my thought was they were going to Canada, because that's where, you know, that's just kind of where people were going to. But in theory, like, they were going to be traveling there and then being transported to Eden. Because when you think about the Savage Land, in a lot of ways, it can be described as like a Garden of Eden. It's this land that's very lush and green. It has prehistoric creatures. So it's something, you know, it has elements from the beginning of time. You know, it could be a safe haven for mutants, and kind of that's what it was in a lot of ways designed to be. And maybe that's where Magneto could be still hanging out, you know, you never know. So that's just my theory based upon the comic and just my own putting together. But I do like they do keep it open-ended. We didn't talk about them, though. What did you think of, like, the new mutants / Lost Boys children mutants superheroes? Any thoughts on them at all?
I loved watching, this is going to sound completely racist, and I'm so sorry, it has nothing to do with race, but it has more to do with how big he was, but the chubby little black kid, when he was running, I felt like they sped that up. That was the funniest fucking thing in that movie. I swear to God, it was that little kid running his chubby little butt off was the greatest thing ever.
I was waiting for a thing like Hook where he, like, you know, he gets like does a bowl of Rola or whatever.
Oh my god.
I was waiting for something like that. It never happened, but
Kids were freaking brutal. That was like Children of the Corn type of shit. They were massacring people.
Hey man, they were born to kill, but I was trying. I didn't catch any, but when they showed like the dossiers, I was trying to figure out like who some of the, you know, the donors were, and I think one was Avalanche. Like I couldn't, like, I'm assuming that the one like older kid who had like the Avalanche powers. I was thinking that's who he was, but I didn't catch any other ones at all.
Well, one was a young character, a younger version of a character that I don't like and I don't know much about, named Richter. He appeared.
He was an X-Force character, yeah.
Yeah, he was kind of like with Magneto a lot, I believe. I think he kind of helped amplify people's powers because I think Magneto was like ailing or something. And so he was kind of there pumping up Magneto's powers, but at the same time it was making Magneto sick and worse. So I don't understand that character too well, but I felt like the lead child of that group was Richter, but I think they changed his power or something. I don't know. That was a bit weird and foggy to me.
I was kind of surprised that, you know, when they finally showed them using their powers, I was kind of like shocked by it. I don't know why. I guess I wasn't really like paying attention and thinking that they must all have like these unique powers, but I was kind of thinking they were all kind of similar, and then they all had these like very unique powers from each other and stuff like that, and I was like, why weren't you using them before? Like, what? Like, it's like now when they're like almost catching you that now you've used them. It's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's pretty.
I guess they're kids, you know? I mean, I don't know. But, one thing we need to talk about, I'm guessing you guys have it. You had it. I know there was no end stinger, but there was, like, the beginning Deadpool 2 stinger. Did you have that at your theater?
Yes.
Yeah.
That was fucking hilarious. That was, like, one of my favorite things about the movie. But, yeah, it was funny as hell.
I got excited for a second because I thought, like, I'm like, oh, Deadpool's somehow in this timeline, like, in the future. Yeah. I thought they just kind of threw him in there for, like, a quick scene. But I didn't realize at the time that it was, like, a trailer. But,
yeah.
I don't know about you, but we actually stayed through all the end credits thinking and hoping there was something else, but there wasn't, and we were kind of ticked off. But
when I was sitting there and I was like waiting to see if other people were, I'm like, is there anything at the end? Because I was like, it's gonna be weird if they have a teaser based upon how this movie ends, like for like a, like, you know, X-Men Supernova or whatever. So I googled it and I'm like, is there a teaser on my phone? I thought it was okay because the credits were rolling that I could take my phone out. And so there wasn't one. I checked a few sites just to make sure because there's been times where like the review screenings wouldn't have one, like, but then the actual one in theater did. But yeah. I saw that, so like halfway through I'm like, all right, then I'm just gonna leave. I saw someone post like there's no end credit scene, and I heard people behind me saying there's gotta be one, it's a Marvel movie. But I'm like, there's also no Stan Lee cameo, so clearly they're not playing by those rules.
Well, apparently there was like a Stan Lee cameo in the Deadpool short at the beginning, which I saw one with Stan Lee in it, where he comes out and he says something. And
nice suit, I think he says.
Yeah, and Deadpool's like, "Shut up, Stan Lee."
Oh, really? That wasn't in mine. I don't. That's weird.
Yeah, I saw that on YouTube. It was like a slightly different version.
Oh, weird. Yeah, there's no Stan Lee in mine. I did hear a lot of theories about that that teaser for Deadpool 2. So apparently, like, the phone book or something like that, there's a, you know, it says, like, Nathaniel Summers coming soon or something like that. And then when he gets out of the phone booth in the background, there's a lot of Firefly posters. So people are like, guessing that this is somehow some sort of guerrilla release of people telling them that it's going to be Nathan Fillion as Cable. Like, I don't know if any of that's true because I don't remember seeing any Firefly things. And I'm like, why would they do that? Like, it's not like they could just tell people. They're going to have to eventually tell people. You can't just not tell people who it is until the movie comes out. But that's all these crazy theories are happening.
Yeah, the only thing I noticed was the Nathan Summers thing written on it, and then. Yeah. In the background, it was like a movie theater, and it said, like, Logan now playing or something like that.
Yeah, because that was the same thing. I'm like, why? What is going on? Like, this is different. And I'm like, and then I saw that it was actually, like, Logan posters in the background because the lights came off, and, like, I thought the movie was starting.
Yeah.
We get this little teaser thing, which was unexpected, so that was cool. All right. Well, anything else before we bring this episode to a close?
No, I think we covered quite a range of stuff, and I think I'm curious to watch the movie again when it's released, and you know, see if any of my opinions come out differently. So I'll definitely keep in mind some of the things that you pointed out and stuff. So there's a lot of movies that I'll rewatch them. Like, actually, there's another X-Men movie I just recently watched, Apocalypse, again. And I loved it way more than I liked it in the theater. So
interesting, because as time has gone by, I've liked that movie less and less. So I wonder, but I haven't rewatched it since I first saw it. So
yeah,
I did do a ranking of the X-Men films because that's the way my mind works. I still love First Class the most, and then it was First Class, Logan, X2, and then Deadpool, and then the Wolverine, and then X-Men. Then X3, and then Wolverine Origins, but it sounds like for you guys, this would be more middle of the pack when it comes to the X-Men franchise.
Yeah, that'd be about correct.
Yeah, I think so. I'm still at Days of Future Past number one for me.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, that was three for me.
So. Yeah, I love that one. I think X2, X-Men United would probably be next, and then. Probably Deadpool, First Class, Apocalypse, and this one, and then you got the original one and Last Stand and Origins and Wolverine and stuff like that. So
did you like the, I know Greg liked the Wolverine more than Logan, and were you the same, or did you like Logan more than the Wolverine?
I think I liked Logan a little bit more as I was thinking about it more, because just there's a lot of good parts of the Wolverine, but there's some that I couldn't get over, like the whole Silver Samurai thing and that weird creature that they put in him, and there was a lot of, like, I don't know what you want to say. It was like more of a simplistic kind of plot. Like, this was definitely a lot more like fleshed out and stuff like that. There was a lot more things to enjoy about it. So
I'd like to go back to that one too, because it's been a while since I watched that. I liked it when I first saw it. I still do, but Greg, did you want to rank him too, or do you? You're just like, meh.
First Class, Deadpool.
X2.
Sure. I don't know. I don't really have a ranking.
Very cool. Well, we'd like to hear what you would rank them, what you thought of Logan. You can do that by contacting us in a number of different ways. We're on Facebook and Twitter. Just search Talking in Circles, GCRN. You can email us at feedback@geekcastradio.com. You guys are also on Twitter. What are your Twitter names?
I am at Heroic Age Chuck.
I am at The Create Forge.
And I am at Movie Revolt. But that'll be it for this week. We'll be back next week. Same time, same channel, same podcast feed. But for now,
this has been Chuck.
This has been Greg, or Evil Wolverine.
And this has been Dan, and we've been talking in circles. We'll see you next time. Did you also have your beard cut so like the kids did it?
I could actually do that right now. My beard is pretty fuzzy.
You know what that scene reminded me of when Wolverine was fighting X-24 in the movie? It reminded me of like the old Marvel vs. Capcom, when you and the computer would pick Wolverine, and like the other one just had like a slightly different costume. That's what I kept thinking of.
Player 2 has entered the game.
Yes. It's like, what? I picked Wolverine. You can't be... Oh, dang it.